Oh, well. So this is going to be a cold opening. For some reason or another, the media player didn't want to cooperate this evening. So what? So what's new? Something isn't working in the studio. Oh, well. This is The Horn. Hi. Good evening. This program is live. I don't know who else has live progressive programming this evening, but we do here at The Horn. It is the 29th day of May, 2017. There are three broadcast days left in May, and we've got $600 to go to finish the month. I'd like to extend profound thanks to the overnight crowd, and in this case, the weekend crew, the monthly regular subscribers who took our $167 shortfall and wiped it out over the weekend, so that we've just got a regular $200 tonight, $200 tomorrow, and $200 following day, Wednesday, to finish off May and be done with fundraising and lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky and move boldly into June, which hopefully will be a little less brutal than, say, May was. It is, of course, Memorial Day. And that means that people all around the country have been remembering those who died in our wars. That was no different for me. I went up to the little cemetery up on the hill. I can actually see it from my kitchen window. And stopped to visit the uncle I never got to know. And tried to learn a little bit more about his circumstances. And I dug, because now this is kind of weird. But I'm not the only one affected. My family's not the only one affected by this. Back in the, I think, early 70s, there was a Department of Defense records building, warehouse, archive, pick a word, in the St. Louis, Missouri area. And that sucker burnt down. And a whole bunch of war records went with it. And apparently, my uncles were part of them. Aw, doggone it. Arnold said, my 22-month-old is looking for the theme song. She likes to dance. Well, is it going to play yet? Can we? Just for Arnold's 22-month-old? Now, why on earth would that not work? All right, let's try. That doesn't work either. Huh. Wonder why I'm getting out then. Hell, well, this may not bode well for playing audio. But anyway, that record center burned down, so a lot of veterans' records were lost in that mess. But I managed to dig around, and I found his... When he was killed in France, he was buried there. And in 1948, his mother and father brought him home. And didn't want him buried over in France. They wanted him back here in the hills and hollers of West by God, Virginia. And so there he lays, next to my grandfather and my grandmother. My grandfather, himself a doughboy from the First World War. And because I was able to know what his unit was, Company I of the 71st Regiment of the 44th Infantry Division, I was able to track down where their action took place. He went into service on February 5th, 1943, having graduated the previous May from high school, and trained and shipped over in, I believe, September, landed at Cherbourg, and was introduced to active service somewhere near La Forêt de Poroy, roughly northeast of Lunéville, in Lorraine. And he lasted all of 2 months. Don't know the circumstances of how he died. But Ferg and I went up yesterday. See, the local religion industry was having a great big candlelight, pass the hat, exploit the dead Christian sing-along there in honor of Memorial Day. So Ferg and I, we were all hot and sweaty from work and from weed eating and whatnot, but we took a minute and just went a couple of miles up the road and stopped and talked about him, talked over him, remembered him, created a little bit of eternity for him, because memory is eternity. And that was pretty much our Memorial Day. If you haven't guessed yet, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And if you would like to participate in the Madcap Multimedia real-time wacky, zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat room that takes place during the 3 hours each evening when this program is live, well, just head on over to the website, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in there, and you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jugapunch and Squeaky and Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom. You will be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this evening to become Sparky HDTV. And you'll have a wonderful time. Maybe, I don't know, maybe folks are out doing Memorial Day stuff. I thought about it, but, you know, no offense, Memorial Day yogurt is just like the day before Memorial Day yogurt and the day after Memorial Day yogurt. So there's that. Yeah. And I'll note that, as said, we cleared the deficit over the weekend, and thank you to the subscribers who did that. Thank you very much indeed. We've only got one subscriber for the 29th day of May. If anybody would like to become, would like to, you know, give that person a little bit of company, it would be welcome. It's just a matter of clicking that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, putting in whatever amount, and going ahead. If you don't want to do that, whoever wants to help keep this all going and hopefully finish May so that we can lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky, that would be great too. And that way we can, yeah, just, you know, not sweat the bills. We got two more bills to pay in May. Yeah. For those who don't like the United States, who do not like PayPal, there's always the United States Postal Service, with the caveat that I talked to Boss Man Wayne today. He still feels like crap exactly 1 week after his cholecystectomy. They say, it's laparoscopic surgery. You'll be in and out. These things are always said by someone who's never had it done to them. And Boss Man Wayne, I'm going to say this, and I mean no disrespect. I bear, Lord knows, tremendous love and friendship for Boss Man Wayne. But because, here's the long and the short of it. Boss Man Wayne had a prescription for post-surgical pain medication. Boss Man Wayne has not taken his post-surgical pain medication until today. It finally got bad enough today that he took it. For a solid week, post-surgery, he has gritted his teeth and tried to bear the agonies of post-surgical trauma. And that's not just Boss Man Wayne. There are people all over this state who will not take pain medications because the propaganda has been so severe that there's a lot of people in this state who are convinced that if they are in the same building with an opioid, they're going to become addicted to it. And that is a brutal, miserable, cruel thing to do to people who not only need but deserve pain relief. So, that's just an aside. But by way of saying, Bossman Wayne won't be checking the mailbox for another while, so if you go via the United States Postal Service, it probably won't be seen for a bit yet. note coming from Brother Deacon Asa. Arnold is very brave. I would no more expose my offspring to the ravings of a neo... Wait a minute. Neoliberal! DNC shillbot than I would question Snuggly Bear Pooty Poot's pure, humane intentions. You are welcome. Yeah. Thank you very kindly to Catherine in Arizona, who got us started for this evening, so we've only got $140 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. That is very, very kind. And thank you as well to Steve from Georgistan, who said... this is in honor of my late father, a Korean War Marine vet who hated war. He got the Smedley Butler message loud and clear, and it was required reading for me. So that takes us down to $120 to go fundraising for the evening. Okay, Dwayne, I'll do the best I can. Just got a note from Dwayne asking for some guidance relative to mountaintop removal. On the issue of opioids, Clarity says, I can talk volumes about stigmas against ableism and pain meds. My mom suffered too much with a doctor who thought just prescribing more would do the trick. Ah, thank you. Thank you. Patrick in Ohio says, listening to you live tonight via headonradionetwork.com. Had no trouble getting it working on my tablet PC. Hallelujah. Glory. Something's working. Yes. Yes, indeed. Now, this is also Memorial Day, but it would also be Moran Monday. Obviously, I can't play the audio that goes with that, because of something going on with the production machine. But before we get into the meat of things, another note, and it is a sad one. I sat here in stunned sadness Friday evening after the program. I received the word that a dear, dear friend, a dear friend of the program, has died. And though it is not military related, well, this will serve as a memorial to him too. I said last week that our buddy Bruce was going under for heart surgery in Minneapolis. He didn't make it. He didn't survive the surgery. They couldn't get him off the heart-lung machine. And it is a devastating loss to me. Quite often, really, I point out the fact that what we have here is more than a radio audience kind of thing going on, but it is... I mean... I said we were the Horn family. And then I got a note. I remember it was from Cassie saying, no, it's not a family, at least not like I've known family. So can we say it's something else? I said, okay, it's a community. So then we became the Horn family community. And then there's Wednesday night, which makes us a congregation, and we're the Horn Family Community Congregation, the FCC, not the Federal Communications Commission, which is about to gut net neutrality. No. Well, Bruce was a big part of this family. You never heard him call in. He seldom, if ever, emailed. But I talked to him a couple of times a month. And just to give you an idea of who he was a great big bear of a man. I first met him in person when we went on the Libboat cruise, yea verily, many years ago. We were kindly gifted with that, and Agnes and me and Margie and Ferg and Doodle all went to sea. And Doodle and I got fried like Captain Pike. And Doodle was kindly cared for by at dinner one evening. John Sinton's wife took off, ran back to the room, and came back and absolutely slathered Doodle so that she wouldn't blister and peel and all of that. It was too late for me. I was already beeping along in Captain Pike fashion. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. But I met Bruce and his lovely wife, Karen, on that cruise. And we continued to talk thereafter. And when Netroots Nation took place in... And Bruce had heard the program. Loved progressive broadcasting. But when Netroots Nation was announced for Minneapolis, and we drove up there and broadcast live and did stuff for about raising awareness of mountaintop removal, Bruce and Karen were there. And it turns out it was just a stone's throw from their home in Wisconsin. So we stopped by for a visit as we drove home. And that developed into a fast friendship. Bruce was the first one to tell me about sand mining in Wisconsin. And he was the first to tell me about the struggle of my friends up in the Northwoods against the giant mountaintop removal operation for taconite iron ore that was planned for scant miles from the shores of Lake Superior. It was Bruce who had me brought up to Fighting Bob Fest one year, where I got to speak, and came up for another one again, once in Chippewa Falls and once in Madison. And like I said, he was a union man, and I mean, he was a die-hard union man. He had begun his career working as a brakeman, I believe, on the Sioux line. And Bruce was the one who turned me on to Stormy Cromer hats so I wouldn't freeze my little head in the winter anymore. Because the Stormy Cromer was invented by the wife of a railroad engineer up north, who was tired of losing his hats and freezing when he had to stick his head out the window in the middle of a blizzard to see where the train was going and make sure the train could go. And he wasn't one of these limousine liberals, or the shrinking violet type who's afraid to fight. Bruce got extremely frustrated with go along, get along Democrats, and he was very, very active in his Pierce County Democratic Party organization. In fact, to this day, I've got a Pierce County Democrat hat, Pierce County Democrat's hat that shows a bucking donkey on the he looked at it and he pointed at something and he said very proudly, "You'll notice that donkey's anatomically correct. It's got balls." And by God, the donkey does. And it makes a difference. Bruce was 74 years old. And I can't tell you how much I'll miss talking to him. I was looking forward to seeing him again. I guess it's like that, though. We always look forward to seeing our dear friends again. Like I said, he started as a brakeman, and he put in his time in the yards. But eventually, he got his college degree, and then he went to law school. Went to law school nights and got his law degree, and took his advocacy higher up and became became counsel, legal counsel for the railroad union. They sent him all over the country. And you would not want to have played poker with him because he could read a human being like nobody's business. And there are countless railroad workers who, over the years, have had him to thank for the quality of their contracts and their good livings. The measure of a man, the measure of a person, is the extent to which, in the limited, all too brief lifespans of a human being on this planet, they impact the lives of others. He impacted the lives of people who didn't even know he had. And in the time that I knew him, he certainly impacted my life. Because he took my, he helped to shift my vision beyond the narrow confines of the Appalachian sacrifice zone, and to understand how much sacrifice was being asked of so many more people that I would otherwise have never known. He also introduced me to cheese curds. And every Christmas there would be a box from the Ellsworth Creamery in Wisconsin. The world's home of cheese curds, by the way. Lemon pepper cheese curds, taco cheese curds, garlic cheese curds, plain cheese curds. Some we just ate out of the bag, others we battered and fried. Back before my gut went on full rebellion against me. Hell, I bet they make good yogurt up there, too. And one last thing. Bruce did not like to stand in the limelight. Bruce did not like to, like I said, he seldom emailed or never called. And he didn't wish to be lauded or praised or anything like that. He just wanted to make sure that we stayed on the air. And so Bruce was the man behind Shirley's challenge at the beginning of every month. Every month, in honor of Shirley, Bruce would put $200 on the table as long as other people would match it. And It was a tremendous help. It made a huge difference. It inspired people. People would write and say, "Is Shirley's challenge going to be on the table?" Absolutely. And so, starting with June, Shirley's challenge is no more. But oh, what a difference. Oh, what a difference Bruce made over the years. And what a good friend. And how I will miss him. How I will miss him. His funeral is Wednesday in Wisconsin. And I would be there if I could. But instead, I'm simply sending a heartfelt note to his widow. But if there's ever any doubt, I was reminded afresh that this is a family, community, congregation. And when we lose a member of that community, sometimes without even really knowing it, we are all touched. It has been a difficult weekend. Because in addition to that, I also got a note on Facebook this weekend that another friend of the community, another friend of the program, another member of the FCC, had also passed away. David in San Francisco, whose posts appeared quite frequently on my Facebook page and who listened regularly to the program, died on April 30th. He was 63 years old. And his roommate simply found him in his bed, gone. Apparently, peacefully. Which would sort of fit personality type, because David was forever posting stories and historical moments from San Francisco's colorful hippie past and information about the benefits of various hallucinogens, mushrooms and things like that, natural remedies. And I will miss him too. And he's missed on the Facebook page. So, like I said, painful weekend. And I realize that this makes the rest of the program probably a little bit more difficult to just sort of swing over into the ordinary carrying on that goes on here. But I guess Memorial Day, I'm sure we've barbecued and gone to the traditional opening day of swimming pools is Memorial Day. It's the unofficial first day of summer. And people enjoy the long weekend. And of course there are doorbuster sales out in capitalist America in which Memorial Day sales are used as a means to make money for capitalists on the back of the fallen war dead. You know, sure, why not? Because that's what everything boils down to in America. Yeah. But we will work our way around to all manner of all manner of things this evening. Anybody out there? You'll be... How about a little bit of this day in history? Traditionally, Memorial Day. Not so much parades like you do on Veterans Day. But on May the 29th, 1927, there was a different kind of gathering in New York City. In the days prior to May the 29th, the flyers had been passed around Jamaica, Queens. It said, the predication for the Klan to march, according to that flyer. Native-born Protestant Americans have been assaulted by Roman Catholic police of New York City. Liberty and democracy have been trampled upon. When native-born Protestant Americans dare to organize to protect one flag, the American flag, one school, the public school, and one language, the English language. And so, on May the 29th, 1927, the Klan marched in New York, and that march devolved into riot. And one Fred Trump, whose address at the time was 17524 Devonshire Road, Jamaica, was arrested by the police in that Klan rally, march, parade, riot. He was discharged later that day. That's right. The father, I don't know what it is about Republican presidents and nasty-ass daddies with a taste for fascism, but the last two presidents we've had from the Republican Party have had the same problem. You might recall that, grandfather in W's case, you might recall that George H.W. Bush, Pappy Bush's daddy, was busted under the Trading with the Enemies Act in World War II because he was eyebrows deep in helping to finance Hitler's war machine. Pled guilty and everything. And now, another Republican president with another right-wing racist problem. Yeah. It's real. The documents are there. They're not made up. It's not fake news. It's not fake history. It really happened. Now, the arrest is real, documented, as is the discharge. But when he was asked about it in 2015, the current president of the United States, Comrade Kumquat, Tovarich Tangerine, said he was never arrested. He had nothing to do with this. And I guess to the extent that it was reported at all, the Trumpansies said, well, hell, half of us as daddies is in the Klan. Some of us is, too. A whole bunch of us is. Uh-huh. And it's true. Brett Stevens, the newly, recently hired right-wing tool of the on the New York Times op-ed page, he was lured away, perhaps, from the Wall Street Journal to spew his bilious trash at the Times. He got all worked up on Twitter because apparently he's still not over the comment that Hillary Clinton made. Hillary Clinton, oh my Jesus, got Goldman Sachs speeches. She's going to start World War III. Oh, gee, God. Servers, better email. Yeah. For some reason or another, over the weekend, Brett Stevens got all worked up again about her saying that half of Trump's supporters belonged in the basket of deplorables. Don't know why still getting worked up about that, but I guess some people just do. But in his case, shit, he's getting paid for it by the New York Times. I'd get worked up too, wouldn't you? Yeah, hell yeah. Because, as the right-wing op-ed guy there, the new right-wing op-ed guy, it's like something out of The Shining. Just sit there and type, but her emails, but her emails, but her emails, but her emails. All work and no play makes Brett a dull boy. All work and no play makes Brett a dull boy. But her emails, but her emails, but her emails. And so he wandered off down the deplorables path. Never recognizing the truth of what the woman said. About half of Donald Trump's supporters belong in the basket of deplorables. I don't know what basket of deplorables... basket? Really? Is it one of those Longaberger baskets that you have to go to parties for and pay wildly inflated prices for, and it comes with a $35 little piece of gingham check in the bottom? Oh, that's a basket liner. That's what that is. I don't know. Maybe had someone with a little more command of the vernacular said it, maybe they would have said, hey, about half of Trump's supporters are a bunch of assholes. Or, more accurately, about half of Trump's supporters are Klansmen, skinheads, racists, neo-Nazis, Christian identity movement types. And, of course, it's true. And it's also the base of the modern Republican Party. Sorry about the buffering. I got a buffering warning alert from Patrick in Ohio and from Asa as well. So, it's no historic surprise to me to find out that a bunch of Klansmen and skinheads and neo-Nazis and racists and Christian identity types and NRA members, various and sundry other forms of domestic terrorists, wholeheartedly supported the son of a Klansman. Damn. Yeah, Trump's daddy was a member of the Klan. at about the same time my grandfather was. We've talked about this. History is not something you can change. You can only acknowledge it and try to do better. I'm trying to do better. Trump simply denies it. Because in what's left of his mind, I'm sure he doesn't think he's a racist. Most casual racists don't. That's what makes it so transmittable. That's what makes it so pernicious and hard to eradicate. Well, I ain't a racist. I just don't want one of them in our White House. I heard that here in one of America's whitest states, 93% white, where only 6 44/100% away from being ivory soap here in West Virginia. But that was it. That's your moment of history, in history, this day in history, 90 years ago, Fred Trump, who went on to have a long and odious career engaging in redlining and housing discrimination and outright racism, was arrested at a Klan rally that was protesting Roman Catholics being members of the New York City Police Department. The poison apple falleth not far from the tree, I suppose. But I thought it would be worthwhile to at least note that. Because somehow or another it reverberates down the decades, doesn't it? America is in its own way paying a price for the way that Fred and Mary Trump raised their odious kid. And we pay and we pay. And by now, everybody, we've had two or three 24-hour news cycles to go over the Jared Kushner business. I'm not surprised. Are you surprised? I mean, if you went and you read the article about what a skeevy slumlord that pasty little nail-faced monstrosity is, it's not a big leap to imagine him thinking that he could simply circumvent the laws of the United States and try to open up a secret back-channel communication, you know, treasonously, traitorously. Maybe not treasonously, but certainly it certainly falls under the general heading of espionage. And get away with it. And of course, it's all about the money. What did Deep Throat say during Watergate? Follow the money. Follow the money, because remember, Jared Kushner's they got money troubles. Even the fabulously wealthy have money troubles. Yeah, nail faced. He looks like I see him and I just picture somebody sucking on a nail. You know, just one of them people sitting there with a nail sticking out of their mouth. He's sitting just kind of pinched up, trying to make every now and then kind of poke their tongue with the sharp end of the nail. Oh, ow! Ooh. Yeah, you never see the boy when he's happy. So I'm not surprised to know that the Trump campaign wanted to open secret communications away from government interference, away from government surveillance, so that certain deals could be made. Not surprised at all. Because in the grand scheme of things, it's par for the course, isn't it? If you're a little bit older than me, perhaps you were an adult back when Richard M. Nixon and his henchman, Hank Kissinger, et al., rat-fucked the peace talks that were geared toward ending the Vietnam War. Because if the Vietnam War went away, Richard M. Nixon knew that he couldn't campaign on his secret plan to end the Vietnam War, which, of course, was non-existent. And if it was anything, it was a secret plan to commit war crimes and try to enlarge the war past the borders of Vietnam into Laos and Cambodia. So you get an idea of Well, it's in the family DNA inside the Republican Party. Party first, baby. Party first. Country be damned, party first. And then there's St. Ronnie of Raygun, who, of course, did the same kind of sleazy backdoor dealings in an effort to make sure that the hostages in Iran remained hostages in Iran so that he could continue to argue that Jimmy Carter was weak and that only he could get the hostages released. And then, of course, there was that whole selling arms to the Iranians business, wildly illegal. That didn't exactly take place over known, trusted, approved governmental channels. Now, did it? Yeah, swap arms to the hostages, arms for the hostages. Iran pays Israel. Israel pays, and then it all winds up in the hands of the Contras, who were a bunch of fascist thugs in Nicaragua. All kinds of fun names involved in that. Manusher Gorbanifar, the Sultan of Bahrain, Eugene Hassan Fus. Was it Eugene Hassan Fus? There's so many names back there. Costa Rican CIA operatives in Costa Rica, and planes, and cocaine, and Oliver North, and Fawn Hall, and Admiral Poindexter, and they all got pardoned. So it comes to me as no surprise that, lo and behold, another damn Republican is out there trying to subvert any notion of good government that you know, we might have. But Lord God, Billy Bob, we're a couple more of these international trips, and what's left of the tattered remnants of American foreign policy will swirl easily down the common toilet. The latest coming, and can you blame her? German Chancellor Angela Merkel declaring that Europe is going to have to go it alone, that the United States and Great Britain can no longer be trusted as stalwart, staunch, unshakable allies. I don't know about you, but that gives me the creeps in rather a large way. Because, see, one of the nice things about the Pax Americana is that, I was thinking about this earlier, trying to figure out when Europe has not been a bloodbath, an abattoir, prior to, say, 1945. If you go back, we talked about Gaius Marius. Gaius Marius and the legions, and another cat by the name of Metellus, I believe. I'm trying to remember, the Gauls came down and sacked Rome in the maybe 200s BCE, maybe the 300s, and gave the Romans a case of the Gallic shivers that never went away. And from there, so there's some slaughter, lots of Julius Caesar, millions killed, sold into slavery. Fall of the Roman Empire, goodness me, Goths, Visigoths, Huns, Vandals. Charlemagne. Europe has been a bloody mess up until 1945. And one of the more beautiful things about NATO is that in large part we've had a period of shockingly unbloody European history for the last 72 years. That appears to be over. This is not to say that the Europeans have not learned to live in peace. This is to say that a vital element of that European peace was the presence of the United States. Republican presidencies, Democratic presidencies, but a commitment to an idea of European unity. Well, the British threw that out the window with Brexit. And with it laying out the window, the Trumpanzees dropped trow and shit and pissed all over it this past November in our national one-question IQ test, which slightly less than half of those who participated failed, but enough of them to put the idea of failing into the White House. And so Angela Merkel, in what apparently caused great big hissy fit paroxysms of "Oh my Jesus," said, we can't trust the Americans anymore. Because, among other things, the United States has apparently, through God Emperor Trump, decided to back out of the Paris Climate Accords, meaning that we, Syria, and Uzbekistan will be the three countries on the entire planet not part of the agreement. What great company to be in, huh? And we're going to get out of the Paris Climate Accords against the wishes of, no kidding, ExxonMobil, whose CEO, the guy who replaced Rexxon Tillerson, has said, no, we need to stay in, please. Because, among other things, Exxon has its own carbon calculation internally. Not a law, not a statute, not a tax. It's how they calculate their finances and their transactions and their dealings. Lord God, Billy Bob. Lizardo in the chat room says, I'm creeped out. We're going to be so isolated. One Katrina-size event and OMG. Yeah, well, we're fresh out of international goodwill. It only took Tovarich Tangerine, 1 9-day trip to Saudi Arabia, Israel, Italy, Belgium, and back to Italy in the form of Sicily, to shit all over whatever goodwill we had left. Germany sells 1.33 million cars in the United States every year, a significant number of which are manufactured by dumbasses in places like South Carolina and Tennessee and Alabama who don't have the common good sense to join the union. And Post... Remember, Post, piece of shit Trump? He's gonna start a trade war. Meanwhile, I guess the invitation stands for Filipino President Duterte to come over. I saw reporting today that he had told his police forces that they could kill and rape three people each in the war on drugs. Over there. How lovely, huh? It's been a weird weekend, a tough weekend. And I don't know if you saw the video of Marcus Aurelius today at the cenotaph, the Tomb of the Unknown, in D.C. at Arlington Cemetery. He went over there for the Memorial Day wreath laying. Later on at the amphitheater, he did some speechifying. I haven't seen that he mentioned his Electoral College victory, but well. But I did see the video of whoever it was that was escorting him, the high-ranking Army officer. Sort of had to take him by the arm because he was looking a little unstable on his pins and lead him back up the stairs after the wreath laying and the blowing of taps. It was a little thing. Not something you'd even notice unless you're sort of inclined to look for such things? But it was there. And then there was the vacant wander away during the press conference with Bibi Netanyahu, where he just sort of wandered off in medias res, and an aide had to quietly convince him that he needed to come back. Sort of led him back, and Bibi Netanyahu was standing there looking at him with a... And what, we're 131 days? None of us we can't keep him. Courtesy of Steve from New York on the table. So if somebody will meet Steve's challenge, we will in the I said I was having a hard time taking the program into a more upbeat place after the beginning of the program. It strikes me that the mood on the program today is extreme. Remember Memorial Day when I was growing up, we sadly mourned their lives. Note coming from another member of the fraternity of Steve. Subject line, extra cheese, please. No doubt you've heard about the royal family of Belgium getting all beat into a froth over Burger King and an advertising promotion asking folks to vote online for the true King of Belgium. Seems they've actually decided to open up a franchise in the happy little bureaucratic paradise, but the royal snots who run the joint can't go along with the typical corporate gag. It's too silly to make any sort of sense anyway, and you got to wonder what the problem is really is, right? If an argument could be made for the parasitical worthlessness of monarchical stupidity, well, this is it. But the Queen of England, she could just go ahead and enjoy the joke. Quick, no fair peeking. Who is the King of Belgium? And more important, who the fuck but Burger King even cares? Yeah, I did see that little kerfuffle, of course, being the history nerd that I am. Well... I don't know who the King of Belgium is now, but I do know that if the little guy with the chaplain mustache and the failed Orthodox Russian Orthodox choir boy hadn't risen to fame and power, we would remember today King Leopold of Belgium as the perpetrator of the worst genocide in memory. For the slaughter that he wrought in the Belgian colony of Congo. So you'll pardon me if I don't get too worked up about the Belgian royal family, and it sounds to me like Steve in China isn't either. With the subject line, the Grim Reaper is on a tear. Ron in Raleigh says, it seems that the Reaper's on a tear. Friday he swooped down on the meat puppet's daddy and took Zbigniew Brzezinski to his long home. I'm thinking he didn't want to see his little girl married off to Squint. Greg Allman shuffled off this mortal coil this last week as well. Right-wing Yahoo Jim Bunning also found his way to the exit. Somehow Dick Cheney is still drawing breath. Evil is, in fact, a preservative. Well, dadgummit, Ron, you can't kill the undead now, can you? There's a reason that his perpetual Secret Service detail doesn't let anybody around Dick Cheney with garlic mirrors or wooden stakes, okay? And one more to add to the list. Frank DeFord. The man who made the idea of sports palatable to a National Petroleum Radio audience that considers itself ever so much above such plebeian pursuits. Well, Frank DeFord died today at the age of 78 at his home in Key West. So, yeah, break time. $10 challenge on the table from Steve in New York. And after that, $100 to go fundraising for the evening, $500 for the month. And I'm just going to say this. It would be nice to just wipe out May now and shut up about fundraising until Thursday. That'd be lovely. It'd be like a little vacation. So, whoever and whatever, much appreciated. See if we've still got sound problems. Oh, for pity's sakes. All right, stand by. I'm going to try something. No, I'm not going to try something. I'm going to try something else. We'll have bumper music or bust in the process. I was trying a little experiment with, I'm trying to isolate what it is that could have possibly be causing the sound card side buffering on the interface. So I tried something a little different, and apparently it messed with things. But we'll get this going yet. This is listener-supported conversation radio for a Memorial Day, 2017. Really? What now? Oh, hang fire, hold on. All better now. We'll be back.
Thank you.
from Jason Isbell in the 400 unit some several years back, 2009. That is Soldiers Get Strange. Great album, that wonderful album. This is The Horn for Memorial Day, Monday, the 29th of May, 2017. Big thanks, tremendous thanks going out to Charlene. Thank you so much, Charlene. Charlene answered Steve's challenge and took it down by another. We got $60 to go on the evening. And beyond that $60, we have, well, only $460 to go to finish the month of May. Thank you, Charlene, so very, very, very much. Let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, Bob, how's it going today?
It's going. It's going. Yeah. After lots of clouds and the intermittent rain and everything that interfered with my weed eating and mowing plans for the weekend, it cleared off and it was just beautiful today, right when I couldn't do anything.
Opportune weather. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to make lemonade out of lemons. I mean, I was standing out there sweating away, and I thought, hey, who needs $100 a month gym membership when you got a weed eater and a half an acre of weeds?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, summer's here. It finally arrived, and I'm happy for the watermelon farmers because they kind of got a late start. But we don't get a heat index here really until it gets up in the high 90s because it's so dry. You know, it's like a convection oven. You know, dry heat.
Yeah, but it's a dry heat. That's what they told me in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Anyway, I made my first attempt at homemade ginger ale today.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, I made a ginger syrup, you know, cooked it down.
Right.
With just regular old, cane syrup, you know, sugar crystals and, reduced it down, poured over ice, and then a bottle of just regular soda water, and damn, Bob, it's the real thing.
Oh, that sounds right fine.
Yeah.
So did you like peel the ginger and mince it up and cook it down in the simple syrup, or?
Yeah, well, it was actually a byproduct of when I make caramelized or crystallized ginger. It's my homemade, it's my guilty pleasure.
That sounds yummy.
It is, and it's, I don't know, it helps my, sometimes with my neuropathy, I get some stomach stuff come up, you know. And
right.
So it helps with the nausea and stuff from all the cramping. So that's a good thing. But, you know, back to the heat, I'm on a couple meds that, make me real sun sensitive, and this week we have an outdoor gig Friday night, and I'm hoping that it's not any hotter than it is now. It's supposed to cool off towards the end of the week. That's the long range prediction. But our guitar player, he's just got out of ICU last week with a breathing emergency, and the poor guy, he can still play, but we basically have to set him up and move his equipment around and make sure that he doesn't get too hot and stuff. And sadly, I tell our last, and I hate to think about it because I've lost way too many friends that I played music with down through the years for whatever reasons, you know.
Well, among other things, the creative life is often a hard life.
And, well, it's insecure.
And it takes a toll, and it's insecure. And it is, what's the best way of putting this? It's open to abuse.
Well, that, you know, it's funny, Bob. Just when working conditions improved, when they, you know, made the indoor smoking laws, the bars aren't having live music hardly anymore, you know. But I can remember back in the day playing in a R&B band and having some guy sitting 3 feet away from me smoking a cigar.
that's got to be great. That's got to be great when you're getting ready for the big sax solo.
Well, and just, you know, Van Osien, we were blowing pretty much all night long. It wasn't just throw a riff in here and there. We were doing, you know, some heavy backup stuff all night. And thank goodness we had some dancing. Well, never mind what helped us get through. But, yeah, it was definitely not conducive to the best of health. And I had chronic bronchitis, you know, down through the years. And that's what that is.
Look at Greg Allman, who passed away this weekend, 69 years old.
Yeah.
And he, of course, in 2010, had a liver transplant. And I guess it bought him, six and a half more years. The creative arts are difficult. I mean, I think about the story that Eddie Van Halen told about the fact that the first time he ever played live, you know, it was like a young, early teen. It was also the first time he got rip roaring drunk because he was so terrified and, you know, wired up from the adrenaline of it. It was the only way he could get back down to earth.
Yeah. Well, and this week on the mental illness happy hour, they interview a guy, a trombonist who's from Australia, a classical musician, and all of his struggles with anxiety and addiction and you know, dealing with a very solitary profession, because, you know, you spend your life in a practice room. You know, you don't have time for a social life to attain that level of mastery. So when somebody says you sound like somebody farting underwater, you know, you want to go out and slash your wrists.
Right, because it's what you have.
Exactly. And they don't care about the other 99% of your perfect. It's that one fart that they remember, you know?
Yeah, and by the same token, I mean, I guess it happens. I don't know. Maybe this is my hillbilly elitism showing. Unless there's something really, really obvious that causes a building to crumble or a wall to fall or something, you know, people don't walk up and say, you know, you're a shitty bricklayer.
Yeah.
Unless something catastrophic happens. Oh, but by God, you let one clam go by.
Yeah.
You suck.
Yeah, you really suck. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a lot of anxiety. And do you love me, or, you know, do you love me for the right reason?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, and I can't even point to anything resembling the professional level, but, you know, all of my experience was more in the you know, stage, theater, that kind of thing. Yeah. And you know, there's whether you deliver well or deliver poorly, there's an energy level that has to be maintained, and then it certainly translates into musical performances. You know, anything that you're doing publicly, anything where you're saying to the world, look at me, listen to me, there's a lot of kind of guts that have to go into that. I mean, it's real courage. And afterward, good or bad, you got to do something to clear that excess of energy. And I don't know about many people, but it's really hard after a performance to just plop down in the lotus position and holler ohm loud enough for them to hear you three counties over and just blow that stuff out of you.
And just go right to sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain, and this is not me crawling up on the cross, there's a certain amount of it that applies, you know, with me. I could never figure out how in the world, when he was going live all the way to midnight, what did Malloy do to go to sleep? Or all those years that Larry King was going till 3 in the morning. You know, what kind of day did that guy have?
Yeah.
because, you know, my, you know, I'm done here at 9 p.m. Clarity, and that's my five. And that means I'm going to need a few hours just to get to bedtime.
Yeah.
But now it gets even weirder now, because it's not just my schedule. I'm on Ferg's, too. Because, you know, we're a one-vehicle family. So that means to get him to work, well, 2 days a week, he works 5:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the other 2 days of the week, he works 8 to 3. And so that means getting up at 4:30. Now, you want to talk about some fun? Get off the air at 9, up at 4:30. Whew! Yeah, after a while, psychedelics couldn't even begin to touch my world.
Yeah. Well, and I've done shift work, and yeah, it tears you up. It really does.
So if I'm a little loopy on Thursdays and Fridays, that might explain some of it. Because you just can't sleep right.
Oh, I just thought you got a little package in the mail every Wednesday.
Don't I wish.
No, we shouldn't talk like that, Chewy Bobo. Frank or Fred will be...
Yeah, we're only kidding, Fred.
Yeah, we're just kidding.
Although I have to tell you, I got a couple of jars in the mail. And they came from our dear friend Alma in New Mexico. One is apparently dried and ground New Mexico green chilies.
Okay.
And you want to, I mean, and I just wanted, and so I just sprinkled a little on my tongue. And I was off to the endorphin races. Because, I mean, it's some hot.
Like a Scotch bonnet.
No, it's still a chili. It's not one of those chinensis peppers, but okay. it's righteous. And then there's a smaller jar, and I mean no disrespect or insult. I'm not sure what it is, but damn, it's good. It's also made of green chilies, but it's more like an apple butter. There's a fruitiness to it and like some spices in it. And I badly want to put it on a buttered English muffin or something.
Yeah.
Whoa. But, I mean, it's got a mule kick to it, too. But I'm saving the ground-up green chilies for my, at least in part. This should last me a little bit. But I'm saving some of it for my first good batch of barbecue sauce of the summer, even if it turns out that I just use it in yogurt and have barbecue sauce yogurt. You know, so be it.
Well, bless you, Bob. I know you're kind of like my father was. He really lived to eat, you know, and really enjoyed his food. In fact, that's what everybody said about him, and the people that remember him was, how did he stay so thin and eat so much? And, well... Because the other times when he wasn't, he was on the scales. You know, he was real obsessive about it, but
yeah.
nobody knew it.
I'm trying to make the best of it. I mean, I'm two pant sizes away from being the same size jeans I was in when I was in college, and I think it'd be kind of cool to get back there.
Yeah, well, I weigh the same as I did my senior year in high school, so I'm pretty much the same. Muscles are in a different place now, but wow. Bob, I just noticed you changed your picture, and your face is just looking more, you know, like a chiseled, hard body like you wanted to be.
That's why that's only shot from the neck up.
Well, I know we all look better from the chin, you know, just, you know, leave the neck out or... Photoshop it.
Well, I've been playing with the idea of getting completely rid of the facial hair and just seeing what's underneath there. I haven't seen it in a while.
Well, I've got a lot of waddle. But I do some yoga, and it seems to help a little bit. Just keeping the chin from turning into several chins. I don't know if I don't mean to get heavy again. We had a good light conversation, but I noticed the mayor of Portland was trying to stop the alt-right from having given them a permit for a demonstration or something, and the Oregon ACLU is stepping up in their behalf. And anyway, on Facebook, people were commenting that, gee, I didn't know the ACLU represented anybody but the far left.
Yeah, I guess they didn't. I guess they didn't know. Don't remember back when the ACLU Skokie. Stepped in Skokie, but in defense of the oxymoron, Rush Limbaugh. Limbaugh used to excoriate the ACLU until they started they tried to get him for doctor shopping, and the ACLU jumped in to defend him.
Were they protecting his right to privacy or something?
They deemed that there was a civil liberties issue there that said that the poor millionaire had an absolute constitutional right to get his dope wherever he could.
And whoever he slept with in the Dominican Republic is his own business, right?
His and the boys.
Let's hear it for the boys.
Oh, you do that
far too. Let's hear it for Rush Limbaugh.
But no, getting back to the killing in Portland. Yeah. That poor town must be in shock, because you know that's not the kind of thing that happens in Portland. That's the kind of thing that happens in Memphis or Dallas or something. Not Portland.
But it wasn't just a couple years ago that kid at Centennial High School, there was a shooting just a couple years ago. And then, we had that thing in Springfield, was a mass shooting. We, we'll forget about that. But as far as Portland, no. As far as that sort of thing. And the thing that some people haven't noticed or noted was that one was a Republican with a family man with four kids, and the other was a Reed College graduate, which I don't know if you know about Reed College.
I do.
It's the exemplary of, the liberal intellectual freedom, still dope, experimentation culture there.
Yeah.
And one of my friends from high school is a graduate there. And then the other, on the other side, the person that survived that was also cut up, and they've raised over $100,000 for his medical bills, was a classmate of a good friend of mine's daughter, at Mount Hood Community College, I believe. She's a nursing student. But
I think what, at least from where I sit, Clarity, what's pissing me off the most about it is the automatic assumption that the killer was, he has to be mentally ill. No. Today, for instance, I've got DirecTV now on my tablet, so that's what I watch. And so I clicked on MSNBC. God knows I'm not going to watch Fox, and I don't get over-the-air ABC, CBS, NBC, so it's pretty much CNN, Fox, or MSNBC. And so there was Stephanie Ruhle, who, as a rule, I don't mind watching. She seems to be pretty even-handed. So they do this little package reader on what happened in Portland. There's something in there about the rally and how Portland's going to be strong. Oh, there's not a goddamn word in there, Clarity. Scumbag.
Yeah.
And they don't have to use the word scum. We said they can do it without
Portland State. And, last year in all the PSU is the Vikings. Okay. And my friend got in this supremacist face, and she said, well, when did you inherit this land? Show me the paper where we gave our land to you, because she's an Alaska native. And he said, we don't need a piece of paper. We just took it. And it's like, oh, okay. And that's kind of the...
That's kind of like my ancestors. You know, we stole it from the Indians fair and square.
Yeah. Well, and that's the base. The base of Trump, they don't think they should have to apologize for anything. And there is exceptionality, and if you don't like it, get out of the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's, anyway, I appreciate her guts because she's not afraid to mix it up. I'm kind of afraid sometimes because she's got three little kids, and if something happened to her, I don't know what her poor husband would do.
Well, and I mean, there's a lesson here, too. These fuckers are getting more bold, more brazen. That guy wasn't nuts. That guy wasn't crazy. He was walking around in America. I was looking at, Willamette Week or Willamette Weekly.
No, it's Willamette Week.
Yeah, okay. The man accused of Mack's double murder is a Portland white supremacist who delivered Nazi salutes and racial slurs at a free speech rally last month. I know because I interviewed him last month, says the reporter, Corey Pine.
Yeah, I know Corey.
And, you know, it's... But are there going to be... No, he's crazy. He's crazy. I'm surprised they didn't take him to... I'm surprised somebody didn't take him to fucking Burger King like they did with Dylann Roof.
Yeah. Well, and from what my other friends tell me, the police have been more reactive to the anti-fascist people than they have been to the alt-right. So, I don't know. The mayor's... He's trying to keep these protests down because there's going to be a civil war between these two factions right in the middle of Portland. So he just doesn't want the city to get, you know, wrecked like happened sometimes in Oakland.
And bear in mind, what do we realistically expect? I mean, we say that fascism must always be opposed. Well, these little thugs are fascists.
Yeah.
You know, Mussolini got hold of the government of Italy with little groups of fascists that turned into big groups of fascists. How do you stop that? How do you stop that? We're just going to ignore them. You know, which is basically the same operating philosophy that allowed the country to be overwhelmed by right-wing broadcasting. You know, back when Limbaugh was just getting up and running, the limousine liberals said, oh, well, you know, we don't want to compete directly with him. We don't want to be like him. Goodness me. Mercy sakes. We'll just let the barbarians talk amongst themselves. And the next thing you know, the entire AM dial is nothing but right-wing filth. Nothing but fascist garbage. And it gives rise to Hannity and O'Reilly and the Michael Savage. And now you got Alex Jones.
And it's all because
they were ignored.
Yeah, no one put up the weak bench. But then again, if you can't get a mic in front of you, you know, what does it matter?
Well, right.
I mean, Malloy was out of the Portland market so long that now that he's, you know, there, it's, you know, that people have found something else to listen to. And I feel sorry for Mike because his message hasn't changed.
No.
He's been very consistent. And so have you.
Well, thank you. I try to be.
And I also appreciate giving me a little bit saner approach to things, you know, that, yeah, we can look at the big picture, but, you know, what's important today is do we take care of our health so that we can live to hopefully coach and guide and give support to others in the future.
No, there are more coming behind. And we're talking about the future of the nation, Clarity.
Well, we really are, and
I mean, Jesus know, I Christ, would... I don't know about you, but the remarks from Angela Merkel, while I agree with them and while I understand them, they're still pretty chilling to me.
Well, I think pretty much the way Trump has acted has probably been chilling as hell to their Zeitgung, you know?
Well, yeah. But I mean, it's just like, well, you know, the United States can't be trusted. The United States word's no good. The United States is in the thrall of a madman. I mean, Jesus, I don't know if you saw it, but that Der Spiegel editorial from even before he left for Europe, in its own right, will make your blood run cold. Not because of anything the Germans but what they're saying about us. That Trump must be removed from office. And then, as we have done here on this program, trying to analyze the means by which that could be accomplished and realizing that there really aren't any constitutional means for that to be realized.
No, because we have leadership that doesn't need to follow the rules.
And the person who stands up and says, quoting, the quote doesn't go directly back to Malcolm X. Malcolm X, it's derived from before then, but those four words. The first person who utters the four words, who says Trump must be removed from office, and then uses those four words afterwards, is gonna have the great weight of everything come down on him or her, and so I won't say it. And the four words are by any means necessary.
Well, this morning on Twitter, can the president be indicted was trending. So it's in the discussion right now. But yeah, with Sessions, he's not looking to arrest anybody that brought him to the dance.
Well, hell no.
Jeff is happy now. He's head of the plantation.
He's eating at the head of the table in the big house.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff moved on up. And Alabama's the standard. Alabama's the standard of justice in the United States now.
Right. I mean, that's why the attacks come on places with more progressive ideas. You know, Alabama and Mississippi are done. You know, they require no further efforts, hardly any maintenance even.
Well, it's interesting that Martin Luther King, you know, he was there at the University of Alabama and Montgomery and that stuff, but they got him in Memphis.
Yeah.
So.
Lorraine Motel. Well, good talking to you, Clarity.
It's good talking to you, Bob. And
are you still working on the Facebook Live thingy?
Yeah, I am, and that's going to be Saturday the 10th of June. So it won't conflict with our groups here. So, yeah,
okay.
I will post it as it comes up, and I hope there's enough light. We're playing right about dusk, so video is not that great if you don't have enough light. But I'm sure we'll be sounding good.
Oh, I have no doubt. Clarity, have yourself a lovely evening.
You too, Bob. Keep up the good work, brother.
Going to try. Bye now. And that is our buddy Clarity, saxophonist extraordinaire. and apparently maker of Hellacious Good Homemade Ginger Ale. That sounds like a fairly easy way to go about it. And then just some club soda with the gingered sugar syrup over ice. Woo! Yeah. Note coming in from Ron in the thawing north, where I'll bet he can even putt without he can probably putt now without kicking up rooster tails. Ron says, my Memorial Day musing. The past few thousand years should remind us that humans seem to be much more inclined to wage war than work at peace. We're damned good at war and get better with each one. Peace, not so much. There isn't a single American reaching the age of majority this year who's experienced a year where the U.S. wasn't involved in a conflict somewhere and sending the bodies of young Americans home. Quoting Gwynne Dyer, peace is an idea we have deduced from the fact that there are intervals between wars. And, you know, that's true, and for some people, peace will always be boring. And it's a lot harder than war. War, you just have to indiscriminately kill people. Peace, you have to make conscious efforts not to kill people. Ron notes, I'm concerned about the succession sequence if Trump is deposed. Pence, Ryan, then Orrin Hatch, give me a break. It's what you get. And when you've got an absolute lead pipe cinch madman in the office, the argument is there that anything is better, because it becomes dangerous to have a madman at the helm of government. It is dangerous to have a madman at the helm of government. Ron also says, with regard to the ACLU. Mentioned that Clarity made civil liberties apply to everyone, even the people we disagree with. Trite but true. And it is. Whenever you hear some law and order type bitching about somebody got off on a technicality in a criminal trial, it's always fun to look at them and say, well, it wouldn't be a technicality if it was you, was it, would it? Well, I wouldn't be guilty. Yeah. But if the cops violated your Fourth Amendment rights, you'd be pissed off, wouldn't you? Well, yeah, because it wouldn't be right. But it's okay for them to violate an accused criminal's rights. See how quickly it... Yeah. And, yeah, civil liberties are, but by the same token, I will note and continue to note the fetishization that we have in this country with hate speech. And other countries have laws about hate speech and hateful conduct that has not rendered them unfree. But we have made a conscious decision in this country, just like we've made a conscious decision with regard to the Second Amendment, that we would rather sacrifice innocence than deal with the realities of unrestrained freedom. There are two dead people in Portland, in large part because a month prior, the guy who did the killing was not upbraided or removed from the streets when he was obviously manifesting a vicious degree of hatred. And it is unfair, in addition, it is unfair to people who suffer from real mental illness to allow homicidal maniacs, and what irony that the guy's first name is Christian, huh? Like him, with the complicity of the for-profit media, to say, well, yeah, he's crazy. The vast majority of mentally ill people do not slash the throats nor cut out the guts of people on mass transit. And whether it's the NRA or your garden variety Republican, or even some on our side, that was crazy. Well, that's just enabling behavior, plain and simple. The legal standard for crazy is complicated, and very seldom is it successfully argued in court. This guy was not crazy. He knew what he was doing. He formed the intent to do it, and then he did it. But long before he did any of it, he was weaponized by hate speech, untrammeled, unrestrained hate speech that we in this country have decided is more important than three mass transit riders' lives. And it is that simple. Oh, my God, I didn't know that. Darlene writing from Connecticut. That extreme right-wing information liberation site, you know what she means, claims Jeremy Christian was also a Bernie supporter. What do you know about that, Bob? I know that's the first I've heard of it. Media bias fact check calls this source highly questionable on the facts. A racist teabagger I went to school with years ago posted on Facebook that Jeremy Christian is an example of the unstable liberal mindset. Idiot. Well, you know, Jesus said, the poor ye have with me. He just never said the poor what? The poor ye have always with ye. I think he meant the poor. You know, he said, blessed are the poor in spirit. He didn't say, blessed are the poor in brains. There's no beatitude about blessed are the hatefully stupid. He didn't have any, because he was, you know, he was alive at the time when the Sicarii, who would cross-dress as women and sneak up on Roman soldiers and shiv them and assassinate them. There's no blessed are the Sicarii in the Beatitudes either. And, of course, somewhere there's an NRA member saying, you know, if only them people had had guns, they wouldn't have had to got cut like that. Whereas it's a lot easier for me to say, if only we were not so tolerant of violent, hateful rhetoric in this country. And oddly enough, we wouldn't not be free. We might just be a little more polite. Hey, let's check in with Todd and see what's happening down South Carolina way. Hey, Todd.
Bob, how you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you lost your friend. I heard you talking about that earlier. And
well, he's a friend to all of us.
Is that the guy that introduced you to the people with the real wild rice?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it's tough. Clarity has some interesting points. I don't know what to say. It's just. And plus the fact, what is this with you? You know, do you eat through us vicariously? What's going on here?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Okay, because it makes me feel funny. You know what I mean?
Well, don't feel funny. No. Don't. I mean, I went on a mini Twitter rampage at the Kroger company over the weekend about Isaac, for instance, up in Columbus. Isaac said, hell, my Kroger's got Kaneka sausage in it.
Uh-oh.
And because I'd said, you know, it plumb evades me that a grocery chain the size of Kroger's can't get Kaneka sausage, the best smoked sausage in the world, into my Kroger's in West Virginia. You know, when they get it into Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio, Maryland, the D.C. area, fucking New Hampshire, Kansas, Wisconsin, and they can't get it to West Virginia?
Like you people don't have enough trouble.
Easy with the you people there, Todd, would you?
You know exactly why I said that. No, you know, Kaneka must be a Native American for full of flavor. And that's, I thought about what you said with the beans, because, I mean, the flavor, it's just, like, packed with flavor. So that is the perfect sausage for, like black beans.
Red beans and rice, man. Red beans and rice.
Oh, black beans, red beans, all the beans.
I'm a red beans guy. I'm not a black beans guy. I can never get black beans cooked right. They always want it. It seems like they're always crunchy somehow, and it's not my thing.
Well, you can't. I don't use the dry ones because that's just. I mean, by the time they get soft,
but I mean they're always chewy. I mean, I think it's something about the skin of the bean. You know, they're little, but I love red beans. Oh,
but you're missing out on black bean soup.
Oh no! I mean, I've had it. I like it. I mean, it's okay. But my favorite bean in the world is the Mayakoba.
Not familiar.
You'll have to find one of your little Mexican grocers or Central American mm-hmm. grocers, Hispanic grocers. They'll have them. It's just a beautiful, beautiful yellow bean. I'd say in shade. You know, a little toward the light yellow side, a little lighter than, say, the skin of a lemon.
I'll have to check that out because I love legumes.
I like them better. Once I had them and I got turned on to them years and years and years ago, back at the beginning of the century, a pinto bean can't hold a candle to them.
Well. You know, once you start experiencing these other beans, pintos, or, you know, they're kind of, it's an everyday bean, you know, whatever. Oh, man. But you know what? There's so much going on. I'm thinking, like, way back, like, last, I don't know, 2 years ago, now when this the crazy man started running, and I was like, oh, he'll never win. He can't win. There's too much dirt on him. He can't win. And then when he broke Philly, I was like, bye. I called him. I was like, yeah, bye, man. And I was like, man, I'm worried. I have a bad feeling. I think this guy's going to take it. And the only reason I kind of really, well, a couple of reasons, but, you know, I'm not going to get all too much into that. But, yeah, because living in the South, which is a lockstep Republican, and then seeing him breaking Philly and then knowing it was an election about, you know, emotion. But see, it was just a few points I wanted to touch on, and it's so sad. These people, these right wing people, are destroying the country at the same time the people who support them feel like they're building it up. Because I'm looking back at Citizens United. You know, that led all this black and dark money, untraceable money, into an election. And I think we talked about how a foreign entity could take over our country. I know I mentioned it. I'm pretty sure you had to, because, I mean, obviously you're brighter than me. I mean, that was a no-brainer. Like, if you got untraceable money coming into an election, man, I mean, setting up shell companies is child's play. So, you know, that was the beginning of the end there. But the thing is, these people got to wake up. People have to wake up. His minions are not, no matter what it takes. I had to go to a relative's house last week. They got an appliance delivered. They're older. So I had to be there when they picked it up, and I could smell the Trump on them. You know, as soon as I got out of the truck, I was like, oh, okay, cool. So we talked about barbecue. And, of course, I had to bring up some politics just because I had a captive audience.
Well, sure.
Yeah, I mean, but I was very nice about it. You know what I'm saying? We'd already established that I broke the ice and talking about smoking meat. And I was telling one guy, yeah, I used to have a Brinkman's. And he said, I have Brinkman's. I'm like, yeah, well, I learned the hard way that you need to cover for your Brinkman's, because I was still coming. You know, I didn't understand that the water and the ash was turned to acid. And, you know, it does what it does. So we got beyond that. And they did not seem to understand that it was illegal for Trump to mandate that people come to his Mar-a-Lago place, right, and hold meetings there with foreign dignitaries, you know, and without getting into the weeds with this, the one guy said, well, he owns it. I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't matter. It's illegal. I said, that violates the Emoluments Clause. Because that's, first of all, it's a private membership. But first of all, it's private membership, and it would double in price when he got elected. I mean, when he was in office. Which means that the entourage, all those people have to stay there. They can't be at the damn Days Inn, like, you know, 3 miles down the street. How is that going to work? It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they just don't get it. So, I don't know. I'm at a loss. I don't know what it's going to take. Because whatever the mentally ill fascist dude says, they believe. And even this thing is looking really, really ugly now. I mean, this is definitely treason. I mean, there's so many violations now. It's just unbelievable. But his minions, man, the Great White Hope, he can do no wrong. And then you remember last October, we were talking about the hate crimes are going to increase. And look at this shit. Now they're adopting what the Muslim people are doing. Like, I don't need a gun. I'll use a knife. Well, I'd say the radical Muslims. Now, I don't know if that was out of spite. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what's going on. But help me here.
I think it's a natural progression, Todd. I think we are witnessing the unravelings of the ideas that form the core of our system of government. And, I mean, if you look at what the framers of the Constitution said about things like, well, the Electoral College, on the one hand... On the one hand, Madison says, man, I hate this. And then Hamilton says, ah, you know, but it'll make sure that we don't get some poltroon in there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Because no way will the Electoral College, even if the passions of the people are carried away and they elect an absolute asshole, no way will the Electoral College let that happen.
That's been on my mind. Because that, I mean, beyond the fact that most people don't understand that that was to placate the planter class in the South, it's supposed to be a safety valve. Like, at some point, this should be like, well, you know, this guy, because it's a small group. How many, what is it, between 350, 600, how many, it's not that many, it's less than 1,000 people, right?
Yeah. Or so.
Yeah. So, you know, they could have all been compromised.
But that just unraveled. And for so long, and I'm the one who predicted that he will go unimpeached and he will go un-25th amendmented. So those two safeguards will also have unraveled. And I know, Todd, I know as sure as God made little green apples, and if you eat too many, you'll get a belly full of them in the runs. Well, I know there's a lot of people, you know, the Kushner stuff. I mean, that guy's got a gun. I mean, it's clear. I mean, it's a treason and the traitors. And I mean, you know, even the Republicans will recognize that we got bullshit.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Right.
Bullshit.
Right. Oh, come on.
The Republicans are not going to make anything resembling a move to remove Donald Trump. Okay? It is not going to happen.
There is one chance
and one chance only. And that happens if with a great big, you know, sky written I and a sky written F, if the Democrats can get their shit in. Till then, we gotta hunker down. Stay in the streets.
I mean, it's all, but we have shaken. We're just down to ignorant, racist people. These people don't want to lose power. They know better, but they don't care. down. And see, this is IPA. We need to infiltrate the Democratic Party, propagate, and assume control. Because these pussy-ass motherfuckers are not getting the goddamn job done.
Let me ask you this. When I said, you know, if the Democrats can get their shit together, I mean, do you realize what has to happen for that to happen?
It's hard. You mean for impeachment?
No, I'm talking about to take back the House.
Well, yeah, it's tough. We got to get through the gerrymandering. That's the big thing.
You got to get through the voter suppression. You got to get through the gerrymandering. And then you have to have a unified, laser beam focused Democratic Party.
Yeah, we don't have that right now.
Do you see anything that tells you we're going to have that anytime in 2018?
It could be. If this keeps going on the way it is, it could be. Because the budget that this guy's proposed, my old guy, Mulvaney, who didn't understand it's a representative democracy. And I have to disagree with you, because I remember you told me that, well, I didn't tell him. You don't have to tell somebody. In South Carolina, you don't have to tell them you voted for them. We have open primaries. However, you can't vote cross-party in the general election. And the voter rolls are very open in the state. So he knew it was an impossibility for me to vote for him. But that's not the point. The point is that he or his staff didn't understand why I'm calling up and complaining about his votes. And I knew at that point he was a lightweight. And this is years ago. This is when he first got in, because he came in right after I moved here on the Tea Party wave. And I was like, who the fuck is he? And he doesn't sound like he's from here to me. He must be from somewhere else, you know. And he's up there in York County, which is the next, that's up near Rock Hill. It's not far from here, but, I mean, he could be from here. I don't know. All I know is that I knew he didn't know. He's totally in over his head, which is why he's got $2 billion or $2 trillion error in his calculations with that budget.
Yeah, well, they double accounted it. They counted
it
twice.
You know. And then they say, well, no, the CBO's not right. No, they're not. Yeah, well, guess what, motherfucker? They've been right for everybody else. Why are you different? Hey, you're fucking stupid. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, he's a little idiot. I loved when the guy, the congressman from Oregon, just put him on the roaster. He was like, oh, how come you can't tell me about rural people in Oregon? Did you see that?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
This is what I'm saying. These events, it's worse every day. And at some point, it's going to wake most people up, I hope. I would hope. But the problem comes in that we need to get, that's why I talk about IPA. We have to get the corporate Democrats out, because they're still going to be beholden to the lobbyists.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, even that's a little bit cart before the horse. You got to get a Democratic majority, period,
mm-hmm.
of any sort, in order to have committees that are headed by Democrats.
Oh, the committees. Yeah, that's true.
Because the committees control the investigations, control the hearings.
That's where the power is.
Right. So.
And that's like,
and so, you know, I'm worried that come 2018, there'll be far too many ideological purity tests going on for us to be able to win. We'll know a little better when John Ossoff's election comes along next month. And there are people out there predicting he'll lose.
Well,
you know, in Georgia, there were people who, oh, by God, Rob Quist is going to, no, he's not. Greg Gianforte committed attempted murder on a journalist, and they clapped for him and laughed and hollered, "You're forgiven." Okay? And people went, "Wow, you know, but Rob Quist only lost by 6 points." Bullshit. The third party candidate was a libertarian. You add his 6 points to Gianforte's 6 points, and Rob Quist lost by 12. Because if the libertarian hadn't been there, they would have voted for the Republican.
Back to the third party crap.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to just pee on everybody's Wheaties, but it's going to take a level of organization I don't know if we've got. I mean, you got people out there that are more worried about the goddamn phony baloney bullshit class action suit against the DNC than they are about Donald Trump tearing this country to little tiny pieces. All right? We've got to punish the Democratic Party, goddammit.
We have so much more to worry about than that. I mean, things are critical. This is absolutely, and you know what's interesting is that if the occupant of the White House is not a Russian asset, he is functioning exactly as a Russian asset. I have never, ever, and I've been following politics since I was a teenager, before I could vote, because I remember watching Nixon in 73, because, you know, the old people were. I mean, that's all that was on TV, because that's what they wanted to watch. So what are you going to do? But this shit is just too, this is very intriguing and very deep. Now, why does this not ring with a lot of people? In other words, why does this not alert everyone in America?
Hayes, my president.
See, we have to get, these people have to stop with that bullshit. I'm sorry, he's the great white hope. Fine, you hate that nigger in the White House. I'm sorry, get over it.
Well, I'm in the grocery store. I'm in the grocery store line the other day, and I said, and there was a new brand of Tic Tacs. And I said, well, you know, I think I'll try these, because, you know, our president says every time he's about to grope a woman that he pops a couple of Tic Tacs.
Wait a minute, you said that out loud?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And she looked at me and she said, well, he is doing some good things. And I looked
like
at...
Like what?
I didn't see. I was cashier, not going to get into it. I just looked at her and said, the only good thing he could do would be to go to prison. Well, he's our president. Ta-da!
I'm glad you did that. But that's what we need. You know, we need to shame...
On the other... And a little decal in the corner of the back glass showing stick figures having sex, and it said, fuck your stick figure family.
What?
I mean, it's kind of, man. I mean, it's where, I mean, some of it's where I live, but I mean, you know.
Yeah. No.
Todd, before we wrap this up, and this has nothing to do with the program schedule or anything. There won't be any programs missed. But Ferg has asked me to do him a favor. Ferg is going to audition for The Voice, which is apparently some talent show on TV. Not watching TV much, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So... he said, Dad, I get paid Wednesday. I'll cover all the costs, but I need you to rent a car and drive me up there because can't afford to fly. Okay.
Up where? To New York?
Philadelphia. I have never been to Philadelphia, neither has he. So, I know that's your old stomping ground, so I just thought I'd let you know. And yeah, you know, we need some good Philly juju going for us going up there. We will leave on Saturday and be back on Sunday.
Boy, you guys be driving.
Yeah.
Once you get on 95, man, watch it and make sure you got toll money. It's not like the South, man. It's got tolls everywhere.
Well, I've already been warned off of 76 because I've been told the Pennsylvania Turnpike is ridiculously expensive.
But you know, it's six. It's like if you have to be somewhere on time, you want to take the Turnpike. But the Schuylkill Expressway is murder. 202 and 70. Yeah, through the Beltway, and but I think that's a beautiful experience, man. You're a very supportive father. I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that's great, and you guys are gonna have a good time. And there's all kinds of good food. They got the pop up. I don't know if you're gonna have time to get out, but you guys got to get out and walk. You got to walk in Old City, walk where people have been walking for hundreds of years. You feel it. You feel the spirit. Honest to God.
Well, I'm gonna. There won't be a whole lot of time, but I'm gonna try to get over and take some pictures at Bartram's Gardens just for Agnes, because you know that's her.
Mm-hmm.
That's her great 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 multi great grandpappy.
John, I remember you saying
John
that.
John Bartram.
Yep.
And
yep.
I'll get Ferg. By the way, yeah, I'll get Ferg a legitimate, honest-to-God, no-kidding Philly cheesesteak. I'll find some cheesesteak-flavored yogurt or something.
Go to a neighborhood place. Like, I'm telling you, don't go to Geno's and don't go to Pat's. That's a tourist trap. Go to a neighborhood place.
Well, we're gonna be kind of center city. It's taking place at the Pennsylvania Convention Center.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you got to go to Chinatown. It's right there at Chinatown. Oh, Bob, you will have. Oh my God, you're going to come.
They
back.
Got cheesesteaks in Chinatown.
Man, they got cheesesteaks everywhere. But they have cheesesteaks bordering Chinatown. But you like if you love food, you got to go to Chinatown. I mean, it's not that large. It's like a few square blocks. But you know what? I'm going to tell you something. You go to the Reading Terminal Market. That's where you go for the food. That's where you get a great cheesesteak. And it's right there adjacent to the convention center, Reading Terminal Market. That used to be where the train, that used to be the dead end for the train that would come from Lancaster County, from Pennsylvania and Dutch County. So they would take all that good produce, you know, and on the train to Philly every day. I mean, the train is still running. The lines are still there. But, yes, it's just a huge basement of Union Station in D.C.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that, but it's like rustic, and people have stalls, and there's this place called Taste of Thai. They have excellent Thai food. But there's a place called, you can't go wrong getting a cheesesteak in the terminal, Reading Terminal. And you won't have any, it's walking distance right there. Now, I don't want to say the name of the hotel, but there's a place that will give you free complimentary breakfast and a suite for a really good rate right there. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to say it on the phone, whatever, because you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, that's a good place to stay. It starts with an H. And that's a really good place to stay.
Well, I figure we'll find something on Priceline. And because, you know, we'll overnight. I figured probably overnight outside the city and then drive on in Sunday morning. His audition's like at 3, and then head the hell on, turn around and head right back home.
Well, that's exciting, and you're gonna like that. That's exciting, and I mean, just to walk through Chinatown, to walk the area, it's a walking city. You know, that's the colonial area. You walk toward Fifth Street, walk toward the Delaware. You can't go wrong. You know, stretch your legs before you have to get back in the car.
Cool. Well, I thought I'd let you know because you and a couple of others are the Philly or ex-Philly contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation. So,
yeah, that's still home, Philly and up in Poughkeepsie, and So, and one more thing I wanted to say, I heard what you said about Merkel, and I see why you said it was chilling, and I know other people want to say something, but it is, you know. I mean, we have just, that's what I'm saying about, like, whatever intention, if this is true, which probably is, with Russia, with this guy, with all these assets, we have lost our status. Anytime the leader of, and look what they produce more solar energy than we do, they're more productive, they're making better cars, I mean, we're trying to be like them.
And the sad thing is they're doing it all because we helped them set up a post-war system that was basically us. I mean, that's one of the things when I was over there, God, it was 5 years ago now. When I was over there, I looked around and it was like, you know what? This looks like the America wishes it was.
It was us, but better. Is that Deming? Because I know a guy named Deming. I can't remember if he went to Japan or Germany or both. Dr. Deming. But anyway, we set them up with the Marshall Plan. But there's a guy named Dr. Deming who basically showed, you know, it's the war. Because he helped Japan. He might have helped both of them up, you know, because that was the whole deal. You know, you have to have a market. I mean, that's why we go to war. But it's not because of freedom, which makes me vomit every time I hear it. It's about to keep these markets open for the corporate America. But anyway, you'll have a nice time in Philly, man. I'm going to tell you that the food in Philadelphia is some of the best in the country, and you don't have to pay New York and San Francisco prices for it. So we just have to hope. And don't forget about IPA. Infiltrate, what? Propagate, and assume control.
There we go. Todd, we'll talk soon. It's only Monday, man.
It's only Monday, and I'm hyped.
All right. Later, man.
See you.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd, calling from South Carolina, Stan, formerly of the general Philadelphia area. On the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. Wasn't that what W.C. Fields said? So we still have, I'll note here, at about 23 minutes past the hour, to finish off the evening's fundraising. We've got $60 to go. And it would be nice to, well, at this point, we're sweating the last 3 days of the month, so not sweating. Hey, look, it's Ron in the non-frozen north. Yo, Ron.
Yo, Bob. How you doing?
I'm a weed-eating fool.
To head off any discussions, long discussions about the weather, I'll simply report on the last month. We are sitting on a river of moisture, apparently. Ottawa's a bullseye, and we've had something like 18 inches of rain over the last month. Major flooding, about 1,500 homes flooded out. 40,000 tons of sandbags.
Jesus!
And this morning I'm driving into work after a beautiful weekend. And, you know, high 70s, low 80s, a little bit of putting was involved. And I go from a mist to a sprinkle to a shower to a God flushed his urinal in the space of about 20 seconds. And it lasted for 2 hours.
Jesus. So the putting, were you doing it three at a time?
No. I was doing legit. But anyway... we're getting some kind of weather up here, and apparently it's supposed to continue all summer. 2 or 3 good days, 4 or 5 or 10 wet days.
That's kind of what it is here. I mean, it's frustrating. This is 2 Mondays in a row where I had beautiful weed-eating days and, you know, couldn't. But, you know,
yeah.
I've got, you know, I got a rock solid half an acre to weed eat and then mow.
I finally broke down after 20 years and bought a new weed eater that I love.
What'd you get?
Made by Steel.
Ooh, Uptown.
36 volt lithium, runs for 25 minutes, and it's quiet. And time is fine.
Probably came with 2 batteries though, didn't it?
No, 1 battery. 3-year warranty from a small little local guy as opposed to a big orange or blue Borg store, and works fine.
So what gauge, what size string does one of those little electrics take?
I think 09, something like that.
Oh, 095?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the good stuff.
Yeah, this is a good machine, and it was U.S., on sale, $175.
Not terrible.
It'll last me another 25 years. They'll be showing me pictures of it in the home, I'm sure. I've got a whole list of topics here.
Oh, goody.
Let's do short hitters. Can we?
Okay.
2 minutes max. What's going on with the budget in West Virginia?
2 minutes max. I think I can pull it in and under that. The Republicans don't know how to govern, and Jim Justice is an idiot. And taken between the two, they got one job and they can't do it. Because the thing is, you've got a whole bunch of Republican members of the legislature who signed a promise to Grover Norquist
not to raise taxes.
Right.
Tick, tick. Yeah. And Justice won't have a clue either, because he can't just bang a gavel and say, this is how we're going to do it. Hello?
He's suffering the same kind of problem that Trump has. He doesn't understand that in government, you can't just say, do it, and it gets done. That there's a whole lot of other people that get a vote, too. This is like McLaughlin.
My personal heartburn of the month is the 45% that didn't vote that really pissed me off because they're bitching. And we've got, as a subset of that, the whole fucking Bernie and Hillary discussion blowing smoke. And between the plutocrats who want things only their way, Bernie or Hillary, and the 45% that didn't care, we've got a government that's bordering on fascist, but is definitely not effective. But nobody talks about the 45%.
Well, I mean, we kind of have here at some length.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a caveat to be had with those 45%, Ron. And I'm sure you're far too savvy to fall into this trap, but others aren't. Others may not be. No, we'd like to think that the 45% who sat the hell home, if they just could have been persuaded to get off of their duffs and go and vote, they would have voted the right way. That they would, if they had just taken our national one question IQ test, they would have passed.
I don't see it that way. My take is they would have removed the uncertainty, which would be a big plus compared to where we are now.
Well, I mean, would you really, really like to feel good about the fact that, what if Trump had won the Electoral College and he had won the popular vote by, 10 million?
What the hell difference would it be? He still won.
Well, but the difference lies in the fact that we can at least question his legitimacy this way.
Yeah, and what's that getting us? I'm of the personal standpoint, let's drop the Hillary Bernie discussion. Move on forever. It's history. It's being written by winners as we speak. And let's concentrate on 2018, do what we can. Let's do better in 2020.
I'm all for it.
Let's fight against whatever we can do to turn around gerrymandering, Citizens United, and move on. Tick, boom, alarms off. There's so much energy being spent on fighting old battles that nobody gives a shit if you win. The rhetorical contest, it's not going to move any yardsticks.
Are you operating under the impression that I disagree with you? Because I don't.
We're in violent agreement?
Something like it, but we do have a problem.
Yeah.
Not you, not me, but the country, and in particular, the more left-ish side of the political spectrum has a problem. And that is, while you're willing to say, let's move on and let the dead past bury its dead, and I'm willing to do the same thing, well, it's like, and I don't know what you've heard or haven't heard over the last few weeks, it's like this silliness that we have going on here in this state of someone declaring that, by God, she's going to primary Joe Manchin. Okay.
Oh, you mean the Coal Mountain lady?
No. We're talking about the same person, but yeah, I mean, Coal River Mountain Watch is a 501c3 and does not support or endorse candidates of any form.
Well said, Bob. This lady specifically seemed to point out Coal Mountain in her bio. Yeah, I'm keeping up, and it's...
Well, okay,
as the old-timers would say, her campaign is worth a pinch of coon shit.
I tell you what, that's a whole lot of coon shit.
Yep. I don't see it being successful, and I see Joe sitting back there rubbing his hands and go, bring it on. Let's divide the vote. Let's split it as many ways as we can.
Well, if he needs to, he'll just bring in 6 or 7 ringers.
Yeah.
And he'll still go out the other side the winner.
Okay.
But wait, because I just want to finish this real quick.
Okay.
There is going to be, and this is proof of the problem that you raised, okay? There is going to be an open congressional seat.
Mm-hmm.
Evan Jenkins is going to run against Joe Manchin, or he's going to run for the Republican nomination, probably against Patrick Morrissey. One of those two will run against Joe Manchin, and Evan Jenkins will not get to be congressman anymore.
Morrissey? Did you?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Morrissey hasn't announced. Jenkins has.
Hmm.
But there's going to be an open congressional seat. And I would be fully in support of this individual running for that open congressional seat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, let 1,000 flowers bloom. If there's another Bernie or a Hillary, I don't give a goddamn. Let's have a healthy primary and let's support the winner on the other side. Because the one thing we know is that some relatively unknown Republican is going to be the nominee on that side. Now, they're going to have a natural advantage because every preacher in every pulpit is going to be screaming that you'll go to hell if you don't vote for the Republican. I acknowledge that.
Did you ever hear of something that occurred in Quebec in the late 50s through the 60s called the Quiet Revolution?
I have heard of it. I'm not that familiar with it.
Up until then, every pulpit in Quebec was pushing a Duplessis government, which was basically fascist, extremely Catholic. And people were starting to feel restive and voted against the priest on Sundays. And the Catholic Church lost the election. Duplessis was out of power, and they brought in more progressive, ever more progressive governments in Quebec. So people who think don't automatically follow the guidance of their priests or ministers. But I'm not sure that that's anything more than an outlier as far as those.
I don't know that that obtains here. And see, there's an added thing on here. It would make perfect sense to run for that open congressional seat. But the entire reason that this thing has transpired the way it has is because there's a hell of a lot of money to be raised for a PAC that is nothing more than a post office box off of the idea of primarying the worst Democrat in America.
Be raised in terms of running for Jenkins' seat.
Right. And, of course, it's an out-of-state group, no connections to West Virginia. And here's the thing, and I hope I'm not taken as being sexist when I say this. I do not intend it from that standpoint. But I know for a fact group came looking for a candidate. They did not say, hey, who would be the best person to primary Joe Manchin? They said, is there some woman in West Virginia we could run against Joe Manchin in the primary? And there were a lot of there were several names I've been told put forward.
And that's fairly Machiavellian.
And this is the one that they got to say yes.
Does she understand the layers involved?
I doubt it.
Okay. I'll move on.
Okay, we can move on now.
I have an analogy to give you.
Yes.
It's apropos of much of what we've talked about today. You know that little white spot that almost always sits on a pile of... Do you know what that is?
That's bird shit, too.
That's bird shit, too. And I'm looking at Trump. And
sorry,
Drew.
I stole that from. I mean, I ruined that for you, but.
But well, I roll with the flow. You know, it's not personal. Mm-hmm. I look at the whole damn White House right now, and they keep trying to find one white spot, but it's still bird shit. So, and I'm sort of mixed emotions. I mean, they keep finding stuff. Yep. One could argue it's treacherous, et cetera. But, okay, if we get rid of Kushner, we get rid of Bannon, we get rid of, I think his name is Miller, and we get rid of the walking corpse, Kellyanne Conway, we still got
Trump. And Spicer and Mike Huckabee's daughter, sure.
But we still got Trump in the White House. We've still got a largely military. I would argue some of the military are trying to act as adults, but they don't have much room to maneuver. And I don't know where the end game is.
McMaster was hailed as, he's going to bring some stability to this. He's got impeccable foreign policy. He flushed his credibility down the toilet.
Yeah.
John Kelly flushed his credibility down the toilet, another general.
And I'm not going to be able to take my damn laptop on the plane when I go to San Francisco to visit my daughter. You watch. 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now.
Oh, I know.
Order of the day. Okay, moving on.
By the way, this has been named the lightning round with Ron from the Unfrozen North, courtesy of Asa in Vancouver, who laughs at your 18 inches of rain. He laughs, I tell you.
Yep, I live there too. One of many places. Easy pass. Turnpikes.
Yes.
I will disagree wholeheartedly with anybody who says that is not the most convenient invention known to man. I have one. I've had one for several years. Use it all the time. Driving down to Ohio through upstate New York, driving down to West Virginia, and then deciding for some obscure reason to go to the Secret Sandwich Society and ended up a little bit on the turnpike. And it's so nice to just wave a card. And then $25 a month on my my credit card, and whatever I use is deducted. When it hits $15 a month, they refresh it. And that's fine with me because I can go through the toll gates at 20, 25 miles an hour. And it works. I'm just saying.
But you do have to use the turnpikes once in a while, right?
I take I-90 across upstate New York. I've taken 76 across Pennsylvania that goes into Philadelphia. And good old West Virginia state of the semi-art turnpike. The card still works there a few times I'm on it.
Well, it might be worth pursuing.
Your only upfront expense is to buy the little transponder card, and it's, I think, $25. And anytime you decide to drop out of the program, you can return it to them, and they'll give you $25, whatever that happens to be worth at the time. And convenience, it's great. Okay, I've only got two items left.
You got 18 minutes to kill, brother.
Procter & Gamble.
Yes.
Moving from a idyllic little town in Ontario. A plant made all the Swiffer products for them. Labeled the most productive single facility in Procter & Gamble, is being closed down over the next 3 years. And it's moving to, ta-da, West Virginia.
I'll be dipped.
Yeah. You want to talk about mixed emotions?
Well, Procter & Gamble's Swiffer products will probably go to hell.
But
where are they moving to here in West by Trump?
I'm not sure. They've got a major state-of-the-art combined production factory somewhere in West Virginia. I haven't followed it up. But it's a does they're trying to move all of their products into one location. So I'm sitting here looking at little old Brockville, Ontario, which is a beautiful little old, goes back to the Revolutionary War community, War of 1812, etc. On the shores of Lake Ontario, lots of old brick homes, very stately. They've had a company called Automatic Electric close down, had Nortel close a facility down. Black & Decker closed a facility down. Two of those three went bankrupt. Black & Decker moved to Mexico. Now they've had Procter & Gamble, and this is a community of 5,500 people. Sometimes husband, wife, and most of the children work in these facilities, and it's moving. Thank God it's not moving to Mexico.
Well, I mean, so is it? Are they citing labor costs or what?
Just general product efficiencies. It's not so much labor cost. And it's just getting everything into one place. Collectively, you can lower costs on several fronts. But the thing is, like I say, mixed emotions. I know the folks in West Virginia need jobs, and these are not Walmart jobs. And two, the unemployed that are still in Ontario are going to have health insurance. So, it's sort of six of one, half dozen of another.
Still kind of hard to call that a win-win for the people who are getting screwed.
Yeah, it is, but they're not going to Mexico. And Trump had SFA to do with it. It was something Procter & Gamble was going to do come hell or high water.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he won't take credit for it.
No. But Procter & Gamble's got to report growth every quarter and increase profits. And a super efficient combined production facility is the only way to do that. And there's a lot to be said for privately owned companies that go, damn it, no, this is not the right thing to do. I'm not going to screw the people that work for me and the people that live in the town. And privately owned companies, one out of ten have some sense of value. Nine out of ten don't.
True.
I'm thinking about the one guy that's got some sense of values and goes, no, I'm doing okay. I'm not going to disrupt the lives of 400 or 500 people that work for me because I could make more money somewhere else. Because he doesn't have to report to Wall Street. Hello?
Yeah, I'm right. No, I was just going to point out that Sparky and I did a little research work while you were talking.
Did I talk that long?
No. It's the internet. It's really quick.
Ooh, I've heard of
that. So, the Procter & Gamble facility is being built near Martinsburg.
Oh, that's not really West Virginia.
That's not exactly West Virginia. And as of December 8th, there was a headline in the paper over that way, P&G still looking for workers for new WV plant. Only 26 of the hundreds of people needed to operate Procter & Gamble Company's new plant in Berkeley County have been hired, as company officials said Thursday that Bounce Fabric Enhancers will be the first of multiple products to be made at the sprawling facility starting in late 2017. About 90% of the employees working at the plant will fill technical positions, which will come with an entry-level base pay of about $33,000 annually, about $25,000 in estimated benefits, including paid vacation and holidays, health care, profit sharing, and an annual gift, said Keith Busby, the plant's human resources director.
That's a bit better than Walmart.
Ranges from $16 an hour to $27 an hour. And they'll have rotating shifts. And the plant will go 24 hours a day.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've had 1,400 applications since last fall, but they're still looking for people
And let me guess, 1,350 of them did not have even the minimal technical qualifications for the jobs.
I wouldn't challenge that.
Yeah. Okay. We've killed Procter & Gamble. Let's move on. Albuquerque? I bet you didn't see that one coming.
That's where I should have taken the left turn.
Yeah. My son has accepted a move from beautiful Oceanside, California, where he surfed on Saturday and then drove up to L.A. for a wedding and pool party on Sunday. Accepted a position in Albuquerque with a company and found a place to live. It just works out this way. He's right in the middle of the university, restaurant, and club scene in Albuquerque. Lowers his monthly expenses by about 40%.
Is he a betting man?
No.
Well, I was going to say if he was, when college football season rolls around, he can always make a little extra scratch betting against the Lobos, because Lobos stands for lose our butts on Saturday.
Well, maybe he won't get his guts ripped out like WVU fans. In any event, he's moving there, and me, in my ignorance, said to him, well, you should be prepared to run into a lot of gun-carrying, even on their hips, right-wing Republicans with rifle racks in the windows. And he jumped right in my face and went, Dad, no, not Albuquerque.
Yes, Albuquerque.
That's probably the hippiest city in that part of the world, that in Taos.
Well, Santa Fe.
He said, yeah, if I drove down to Santa Fe, I'd expect that. He said, Albuquerque, I've done some visits there. It's all people in tie-dyed shirts and art exhibits on the street in places you wouldn't expect to see them. And Volkswagen camper vans. And I'm going, really? So I'm looking forward to my first visit there and forming my own opinions.
He's going to have a different winter.
Well, it's up 5,000 feet. Yep, he will. It's going to be a little bit like an Ontario winter, but without the pain, the angst, and the anxiety of, will this ever end?
It's a dry frostbite.
Well, I'm going to leave you to fill about 5 minutes of airtime. We can do the 2-minute bullet rounds sometime in the future.
Oh, I think we should.
Okay.
Just a quick question, though. Are you bound for the sandbox anytime soon?
Two or three times in the next 3 or 4 months. I'm looking at one stint in September that may last anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks.
I'd just lay in a good supply of maple leaf t-shirts. Just make sure nobody mistook you for a merkin.
No, the rules are that you can take in 4 bottles of alcohol. I'm just trying to find somebody that makes good bourbon in 3-liter bottles.
You are a resourceful soul. No, I just make sure nobody thinks you're murking. And if anybody offers you the chance to lay your hands on the glowing orb, tell them no.
No. That inspired so many memes.
Oh, God, they did. Well, that and the picture with the Pope, you know, with the little with the Adams family, right?
And Mancoa with the handshake. So, yeah, it was an inspirational trip.
It was one of the most eventful ones in recent
years. It was a big trip.
Well, you know, I just flew in from the Middle East, and boy, are my arms tired, you know?
Got to run, Bob.
Later, Ron. Sure. My best to the Reverend.
Will do.
Bye. Bye now. Ron in the soggy, unfrozen north. Yeah, he's right. There's about 7 minutes left in the program. And I will note, once again, that we got about $60 to go in fundraising for the evening. And that would mean $460 to finish out the week. And I would love to give everybody a break from listening to me talk about fundraising for a couple of days. So, you know, it's just an idea. But there you have it. Let's end with a giggle. And, yeah, a giggle, but by the same token, a giggle that comes from a story that is... Yeah, arguably sad. It's an obituary. It's an opinion piece over at Newsweek by one Matthew Cooper. An appreciation of Greg Allman's life. Greg Allman, Southern pride without the Confederacy. Well, okay, I'll take cards in that. I'll take cards in that game. At one point, Cooper points out, the Allman Brothers symbol was a trippy mushroom, not a Confederate flag. Yeah. Also, point out the fact that the Allman Brothers got their start, sort of, sleeping on the floor at Fame Recording Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. But this is why it's a giggle. Matthew Cooper apparently means well, and I don't want to take that away, but you know how from time to time I point out that copy editing is, you know, dead? This is one of those great... No, it's not great, but this is one of those art of word-knowing moments. I'm just opening a couple of sentences. The tributes to Greg Allman, who died Saturday at 69, have been flowing steadily. They've noted his mellifluous voice, his keyboard, his composing talents, his marriage to Cher, his creation of Southern rock as a genre. But a lot of them have missed the ways in which the Allman Brothers Band promoted a sense of Southern pride that was tolerant and racially integrated, without peons to the Confederacy or even delving in specifically politics. Did you catch it? It's an art of word-knowing moment. The Allman Brothers Band promoted a sense of Southern pride that was tolerant and racially integrated without peons to the Confederacy. P-E-O-N-S. To the Confederacy. Peons. Those of us who practice the art of word knowing know that what Matthew Cooper was going after here was pions. P-A-E-A-N-S. Pions. It comes from the Greek. It is a sort of a hymn. It was song of hymn of or a song or a hymn of praise, according to Merriam-Webster. Tribute, thanksgiving, or triumph. A work that praises or honors its subject. So, in other words, Matthew Cooper is saying, without hymns of praise to the Confederacy or even delving in specifically to politics, we'll leave the awkward construction of in specifically to politics alone for the moment. Instead, what we get, courtesy of Matthew Cooper, instead of, if he had used the right word, racially integrated without hymns of praise to the Confederacy, we get racially integrated without Spanish-American day laborers to the Confederacy. I expect to see things like this in your average garden variety blog. That, however, is Newsweek.com, where maybe, for all I know, all the copy editors have quit work to apply to work at the Procter & Gamble plant in Berkeley County, West Virginia. And not a bad idea, either, insofar as not much good at the whole copy editing thing. Pays to enrich your word power, pion versus peon. And thus, we close the program for the evening, this Memorial Day program for the 29th day of May, 2017. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank you to everyone who keeps the horn going. Thank you, Renee, for jumping in here at the end and taking us down to only $50 to go. Thank you, Renee. Thanks to everybody, again, who keeps this program going with your kind gifts. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.